Welcome to the Jack Pierce Project. Learn how to become a best-selling author and unleash your potential today. We post new episodes every Friday night at 9 p.m. EST. Go to jackpierceproject.com/shop to support this show. If you enjoy this episode, please share it with a friend. Now here's your host, Jack Pierce.
All right, everybody. I got a new little thing I want to talk to you about this week. I think this is really important, and this is something that people really should take into consideration when they're working on different creative projects, because I kind of came to a realization recently when it came to actually working on this show and a few other projects I've been doing. And I have been doing what they call tone chasing, more or less. So what I did was I have bought 3 or 4 different microphones in the last month or so, and have been testing them out, trying to get that radio sort of Howard Stern, NPR, whatever you want to call it, sort of voice, because I feel like that's what you want to hear. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, because I never really thought about it before. But for some reason, I got a little obsessive about that I wanted to go out there and get the best of the best mic. And even though I put up a post on Reddit about a month or so ago saying that you should stop chasing tone and, you know, go and worry more about your actual content, you know, I went and chased that dragon too. In the last episode, we talked about chasing the dragon when it came to trying to be like trendy and trying to hop on the bandwagon and stuff, and how a lot of the time that doesn't work. It just flat out doesn't work for anybody, and really it just leads you to misery and failure anyway, because you're just not happy doing it to begin with. Because I will say it one more time, Stephen King said this, and it's 100% true. If you could do it for free, if you couldn't do it for money, that's what you should do. You shouldn't do something for the sole purpose of money, unless it's like out of necessity, like having a day job so you can pay your bills and feed your family. That's understandable. But when we're talking about creative endeavors, really, they should not be seen as something to try and make your main income source, unless you're already at that point where you really are close to being able to do that anyway without having to make it your full-time job in your head, because I do that a lot. But anyway, back to what I was saying about gear chasing anyway. So I bought a Samson Q2U, which was Reddit's favorite microphone. It was like $70. It looked just like any other stage microphone, just a, you know, regular handheld microphone. And I recorded a few things with it. And the thing I noticed was, and I've noticed this with a lot of different mics, including this one, you have to angle it pretty much perfectly for it to sound right, you know, in my ears at least. You have to position it exactly right. And the problem is, the right sound for me is almost always directly in front of my mouth, which gives you the plosive problem, where you hear all these hard P's and T's and stuff like that. And that's what was wrong with the Q2U, is it sounded good when it was up close, but with the pop filter, with trying different angles, no matter what I did, it would go from sounding like a $1 million microphone with a really bad plosive problem down to a $10 headset, depending on where it was. I don't know what I was doing wrong, but I'm figuring that one was defective. It had to be for it to be that picky. I tried an XLR and I tried a USB. It didn't work out. So then I went and I got a Shure MV7, which is $250, which I think is just ridiculous for a microphone, at least for my level. But I figured I wanted to sound like Howard Stern. I wanted to sound like NPR. So I was going to go get a microphone that they would possibly use, or something similar to what they would use, because I flat out cannot afford an SM7B, which is $400 for the microphone alone, without an interface, without anything else. I get it. It sounds really good, really clean. But does it sound better than this microphone that I've recorded 99% of this podcast with, which is a Blue Yeti Nano? No. It didn't sound $100 or $150 better. It sounded good. The plosives were gone. But the problem was that it only would work with its own USB cable that came with it, which was a thin, cheap piece of garbage. no matter what other cable I used, it had to have its cable for it to work with the software that made it sound good, which is Shure Motive. If you didn't use their cable, it would not boot up. And I went through a lot of fidgeting and fighting with this thing, and it ended up where the microphone just stopped working. No, I didn't throw it against the wall or abuse it in any way. It just started lighting up in odd shapes and everything on the sort of little touchscreen thing, which is just one more thing to break, of course. And it just stopped working. So I had to send that one back, which I'm still waiting for my money on that. But I will have gotten my money back by now if you're hearing this, because this is, you know, episode 14, which is coming out in about a month. So back to the Yeti. And then I was like, you know what? I always wanted to try that Rode NT USB. I hear how it was the gold standard for streamers, and it had that really nice pop filter on it, and it just looked so cool and professional, and that was it. And then I went and I paid for that, which was $170 plus tax. I got that in today. What microphone am I using right now? My Blue Yeti Nano. What's the problem with the Rode, you ask? It sounded so thin that at best I could make it sound like this microphone that I'm using right now. This microphone, which is supposed to be one of the worst podcast microphones there ever has been made, basically. People say the Blue Yeti is terrible, don't ever get it, get an XLR setup. And I'm starting to get flashbacks back to when I was a teenager, where I was on a forum where anytime you ask, you know, if this solid state amp was good, everyone in the world, or at least on that site, would come screaming at you about how even this super simple one knob tube amp would sound better than that fancy digital one that had all these sounds. And I'm not talking about a Line 6 Spider, I forgot what it was, but it was a decent sounding amp, where this Epiphone Valve Jr., because it had tubes, was automatically better than everything else that didn't have tubes. You had to go tubes or nothing. And I remember they would always bring up, get a used 5150 for $500 or whatever it was. I can't remember. But the thing is, I heard a used 5150 and it didn't sound good to me versus other stuff I'd used, like my Fender Mustang amp that I use, which I like a lot. It takes a lot of tweaking. It takes a lot of work to get it to where you want it. And I'm sure you would with the 5150, but I have to go back to my original advice that I gave people on Reddit, which was stop chasing gear and focus on your content. Make your content more valuable, because nobody in the crowd cares that you're playing your priceless Fender Strat from 1950, whatever. All they see is a group of people with one sound that comes together into one mix, where it's one big sound altogether, not individual parts. And that's what the audience hears. And as long as you're not, as long as you're in tune and your guitar isn't buzzing like crazy or screwing up, they don't care if you're playing a priceless 1950s Stratocaster or if you're playing a 2021 Fender Squire Bullet that cost, you know, $50 used. They don't care, as long as you're in tune and you sound good with the rest of the band. Now, I know that doesn't necessarily fit with podcasting, because podcasting is more or less a vocal only thing. It's you hear me talking and that's it. But I started thinking to myself, when I listen to other podcasts, or especially YouTubers, because I'm more of a YouTube guy, I like to listen to YouTube in the background and don't really watch it that much actively. Because remember I told you about the levels of interactivity that people get out of certain mediums, podcasts being like the least interactive, you know, all the way up to books being the thing that takes your attention the most because you have to read the thing actively to consume it. When I'm listening to a YouTuber, I'm listening to him on my phone, which doesn't have fancy expensive speakers, and my headphones, which aren't fancy and expensive either, on my TV, which isn't fancy and will make any mic sound awful, pretty much, or on my PC, where, yeah, it'll sound the best it could possibly sound through the speakers I'm using, which are not audiophile speakers, but I'm getting to a point here. And even at the best speaker configuration, which would probably be my studio monitors at the studio, my Mackie CR3s, because I don't have the fancy $500 or $600 speaker pairs, I listen back to these shows, and not once have I ever said to myself, what kind of microphone is he using? I never thought about it until I started making podcasts. As long as the guy's audio did not sound scratchy and terrible, like a Logitech, you know, one of those gaming headset mics that, you know what they sound like, they're really scratchy and terrible sounding. If it even sounded remotely okay, it was invisible to me. I didn't think about what type of mic he was using. I didn't care. I cared about the content and that's it. But for me, I always wanted that sort of really bassy, heavy Howard Stern sort of sound out of my microphone, or as they call it, the NPR sound, where it sounds super professional. And Howard Stern uses a microphone that's worth over $3,000. Per microphone. And he probably has God knows how much equipment that mixes this thing, that has all sorts of rack mount stuff that gets that microphone to sound like that, because I listened to that microphone being reviewed by a guy named Podcastage, who I respect for his knowledge and thorough work on the microphones, but I feel like he makes every microphone sound kind of thin and tinny because his voice doesn't have any boom to it. It's not his fault, but I like listening to other reviewers for the most part when it comes to the demos, because I want to hear someone that has a deeper, more bassy voice close to mine so I can kind of hear what I would be hearing in person, because I can't rent these microphones. You can't go to Guitar Center, as far as I know, and just grab a bunch of microphones and just record them all and see which one you like the best, which one best fits your voice. Because I think that's a big thing, is your microphone really is more about fitting your voice in particular, because some people sound great on these SM58s or these SM7Bs. Some people sound great on them. Some people sound awful. And you see podcasters and people changing microphones constantly, trying to sort of chase that sound, but the audience is listening. Are they turning it off? Are they going to turn off this show because I'm using a Blue Yeti that they can't see? Are they questioning right now if I'm using a $400 mic, a $1,000 mic, a $100 mic, a $60 mic? If it sounds good enough for them to keep listening, it doesn't matter. But I know how we are, us gear people, like guitar people. We have to have a different guitar for different songs and different sounds and all this stuff. And it really boils down to this. We're at home alone with our fancy, beautiful guitars that play so well and sound so pretty to our ears. A lot of times, we are not working with other people in the room, if you know what I mean. Because all we hear in our room is our sound through our speakers at the angle that we're standing at it, right? We only hear our sound, not the sound that is mixed with other instruments or other items in that mix that make that sound, that song, that podcast whole. We don't hear that whole ensemble together like the audience does. See, I'll mess with this microphone and think, oh, that sounds awful. Then I'll get into Audacity and do all the editing and the compression and everything like that, trying to get it to sound as good as possible. And I will think it sounds decent on my speakers, which I don't know what they're mixed to, but these Creative Lab speakers are mixed really thin compared to my Mackies, which make everything sound like it has a massive amount of bass on it. So that's another thing you got to think of. To me, the best way to test your audio, and I know this is a little bit headache inducing, but seriously, take the MP3 or whatever it is, just take a sample or even a segment or whatever, put it on your phone and play it in the car. I guarantee you that's the sound you want to be aiming for, is for it to sound good in your car. I'm going to tell you why. Because most people that are listening to podcasts are on their way to work, or they are at work. So focus on your car sound and a mid-range pair of headphones. Not an audiophile one, because how many people really have $400 headphones? And you know that they're not going to sound good through $10, you know, skull candies. They may sound okay, but no one's really going for the big epic audio out of something like that. Get a pair of $40 or $50 headphones and listen to that. Listen to your car sound and then listen to your speaker sound, okay? Because while you can't gauge what type of system these people are going to be listening to you on, they will not hear all the nuances you did with your speakers, with your mic, with your setup, with your room, with your car. You can get an average idea of what it sounds like, where is it tolerable or is it really bad sounding? And that's what it really boils down to, because you can't check your sound with every speaker or every car speaker or every set of headphones or whatever, every phone. You just can't. I try to make my audio sound the best I can with what I got. Now, what does this have to do with books or anything creative? You don't need these fancy programs to write your book like Scrivener or whatever else people try to get you to use. These different fancy programs of this program will help you write better and, you know, organize your thoughts here, there, and everywhere. I mean, if it works for you, that's fine, but you don't need to go out there and get complicated and get, like, you know, the fancy sort of setup to create your wonderful art. You don't need Photoshop if you can't afford it. You can use Paint.net or GIMP or something else or whatever works for you. Take what you have that works now and just make your art. I don't know of anyone, unless they are some type of super selective artist type, that would know the difference between a picture that was made in Photoshop versus GIMP versus Blender versus Paint.net versus regular MS Paint. The general public doesn't know. Just like with your podcast. Alexa, cancel my 10 p.m. alarm. No, nobody knows the difference. It's just like with your podcast. Nobody knows the difference between if you made your podcast with Audacity, which most of us do, I imagine, versus Reaper, which I'm sure is a wonderful program, which I've never used or gotten into. Or if you use Adobe Audition or whatever software you use, because the thing is, people on the whole, and I've talked about this in Nuke Your Brain, are really there for the surface level. Unless something is distracting to them, they're not really going to focus in on the same things that we do. Because I focus in really hard on making the audio as perfect as possible. But most people that are listening are just listening to me talk because they want to hear what I have to say. And as long as my screw-ups aren't too frequent and it sounds good enough, most people aren't going to notice any of the screw-ups or the patches or the jumps or the edits or whatever that I try to hide as best I can. Because I don't talk this fast naturally. But I don't want to have a podcast that's constant pauses either, because I do pause a lot and really try to calculate my words as much as possible so I'm not, you know, rambling on or giving you BS. Use what you have to make the art that you want to make. Now, one tip I will give you, because I will tell you how I do my setup right now, because, you know, this whole journey of getting all these expensive microphones and none of them working out was fun, and I didn't really lose anything at the end of the day, but it was a little bit stressful trying to chase that dragon. Like I said in the last episode, don't ever chase a dragon. Okay, so what do I use to record this show? I know it's not the best show sound-wise. It's not Howard Stern. It's not NPR. I don't have the money for it. I probably never will have the money for all of that gear. And even if I did have the money, I don't know if I'd want all that gear anyway. It's just a lot of headache to set up. I use a Blue Yeti on a stand. This sort of like a telescope stand is what they call it, where you can adjust all these little arms and stuff to get you the exact right angles you want. That goes via USB to my computer that I built into OBS Studio. Not Streamlabs OBS, but OBS Studio. It goes through a filter for a noise gate, noise suppression, and a compressor, and then that is recorded like a video would be. Then I take the video, I split the audio from it using a program called WinFF, which is basically FFmpeg, I believe, and then dump it in Audacity and do all my edits and all of my nonsense or whatever, the descriptions and the ID tags and all of that stuff, and then I put it up on Anchor and that's it. The end. It's done. It's a lot of work. It takes many hours to record this show, to script certain bits, because the Are You Afraid of the Dark stuff is usually pretty scripted. Not fully scripted, but I have to write down what's going on in the episode to give you the summary. But I'm thinking about kind of falling away from that because I want to be more freeform about it, I guess. I feel like it's kind of obvious when I'm actually reading the plot to you and then reacting to it in a way. Maybe I'll work around that, because that's the thing with this show, is I'm constantly kind of shifting things around, trying to figure out what you like, what would be good. And I think that the show's been growing pretty well, you know, a lot better than I thought it would have at this point in time with the show. And I don't know what your exact favorite part is, and I don't have any analytics to tell me when you listen and fast forward or anything like that that I know of, at least. And you know, if you listen all the way through, I appreciate it. It's wonderful. I don't really get paid more or anything if you listen all the way to the end. It's more or less like I get paid if you go to terratracks.com/shop, of course, with all those deals that I procured. And you know, a lot of times I'm even thinking about those, you know, thinking about getting rid of some of those deals and giving you better ones with different vendors, and even testing different vendors so I can actually vet the stuff so I'm not selling you crap, you know, because I'm really starting to dislike NordVPN like quite a bit. But I also don't like Express, so it's sort of like, do I want to get rid of VPNs entirely, or am I just being really nitpicky? Because that's my thing. I nitpick a lot of my own work to the point where maybe it's, you know, detrimental to the work itself that I nitpick that much. So what's the point? The point is, use what you got. If all you have is a pen and paper, just write your story that way. You don't need a MacBook to write a book. George R.R. Martin, the guy who did Game of Thrones, he wrote and continues to write all of his books with a computer that is older than most of your listening, with a computer that is older than most of us. I'm 32. His computer is older than me. He uses an old MS-DOS machine with a black and white word processor called WordStar 4.0 from like 1991 or something. This is before you even had Windows with the icons and all that. I mean, they had like Windows, you know, 2 and 3, but this is before we got the Windows that you recognize today, like Windows 95. And he wrote these big, epic, you know, multi-thousand page books with that WordStar program. You don't need a MacBook. You don't need the perfect keyboard. You don't need the perfect microphone, the perfect tools, the perfect software. You don't need anything perfect, because honestly, it's really about the final product. Think about any product that you consume today. How many times do you really sit down on any product, whether it's a TV show, a movie, a podcast, you know, or even just any random product that you use or buy throughout the day? Do you ever sit there and really think about how it's made and really think that, you know what, I like this stick of gum, but they could have made it better if they calibrated their machine to this, that, and the other setting? Nobody cares. Just you. Maybe a few others. Anyway, enough rambling. I think you're ready to go into Ghost Rider, and I am too, so I'll see you in a moment.
Six.
It's kind of crazy. I've never been in your room before, and we've known each other for how long now?
Sam asked.
4 years, I said. Well, it's exactly what I expected. Band posters on the wall, a twin bed, and a laptop. It fits you.
What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, no, I didn't mean for that to sound bad. It's just, it's what I imagined it would be like in here. Kind of crazy, I know. I think about stuff like that when I'm alone, getting a peek inside people's worlds. Do you ever think about that stuff?
Not really. I'm so tied up in my own stuff with the band and mom being sick that I don't really think about other people much.
Well, it's a big world out there. Maybe one day we can see it together?
Yeah, maybe.
You seem sad. I mean, I'm right here. I know you want me, and I've wanted you for a long time.
You have?
Yeah. I did ask you to the dance, after all. I figured you'd ask me, but I wanted to make sure you were the one I went with.
I was shocked. I had my eye on her for so long, yet she never paid that much attention to me. Sure, the dance was one thing, but to be real, she was probably trying to shack up with Mike during it. Her dad hated Mike, and I thought I was an excuse to get to him. She would have run off with him and left me hanging. But now I questioned that.
Well, I'm glad you did. I like you too, you know? I don't know why I never bothered to... It's fine. You were intimidated, is all. A lot of people are. That jerk Mike tries to get in my pants all the time, but he's not my type. You are. I looked into Sam's eyes. She seemed normal, but what she was saying wasn't. I should have been happy that she was in here, hanging out with me, talking about how she likes me, but it didn't feel right. It felt off. The Sam I knew wouldn't be saying these things. She'd always been super shy about her feelings. She hid that behind her friendly personality at school and with others.
Can I ask you something? She asked.
Yeah, sure, anything. You know that, I said.
Do you love me?
What?
Do you?
Wait, just hold on a second, what?
I love you, Zach. I always have.
Thanks, I just don't know what to say. I just...
You don't love me, do you?
I can't believe this. I've loved you for so long, and now that I finally come out and say that, you don't love me back. I can't believe this is happening. Oh my god, what have I done?
Wait, relax. No, it's too late now.
No, it's fine. It's just,
You like someone else, don't you? Who is it? Is it Courtney on the student council? Crystal?
What? Sam, what are you talking about?
It's Crystal, isn't it? To think I have been her friend all this time and she up and steals you away from me.
No, you've got it all wrong. Sam got up and stormed out of the room and left my house in a fit of rage. What had I done? I looked at my desk and saw the typewriter glowing again.
You did this, I yelled.
I took the typewriter and tossed it out the window, and a second later I heard it smash in the driveway. I looked out, seeing it in pieces. I took a deep breath and stepped back. I needed some water and to relax and think about everything. I turned around and almost gasped. The typewriter was back on my desk. I checked out the window, but nothing was there now, as if I hadn't thrown it at all. It began typing on its own again. I approached and slowly gulped as I read the message.
Please don't do that again. I have not done anything to harm you, have I? It said.
This is all your fault, I said. I gave you what you wished for.
I didn't tell you to make those people break into that house, or tell you to make her go nuts.
Have you never heard, be careful what you wish for?
I wish you went away forever.
I can't do that.
Why not?
If I destroy myself, the wish cannot come true. Self-destruction is impossible.
What are you? Who are you?
It sat there still, doing absolutely nothing. The glow faded away, and I grabbed it with both hands and shook it.
Answer me! What are you? Why are you doing this to me? Stop it, right now!
I screamed. Nothing. Dead silence. I sat back on my bed and shook my head. I felt my knees and looked up at the ceiling fan above.
Please, if anyone's listening up there, help me. Stop this thing.
Welcome back, everyone. Let's talk about the tale of the pinball wizard. This one, I'm actually very conflicted about even discussing it, because honestly, I love this episode so much that I don't want to spoil it for you. I really don't want to spoil this episode. So I'm going to basically give you sort of like a review and an overview of what it was about, what I liked about it, stuff like that, without really giving away any of the plot details, you know, later in the episode or the ending or anything like that, because I want you to experience this episode on your own. It's one of the few that I really feel that strongly about in that direction. This episode is about a kid that goes to some guy's shop, and I'm not sure exactly what the guy does. I guess he repairs toys or arcade machines or something. And he pesters the guy into giving him a job. Well, the guy says he won't give him a job because all he would do is play pinball all day. And he has these pinball machines in the back, and he tells the kid to don't touch them because they are broken or something like that. So the guy goes on lunch, and he decides to let the kid just watch the shop just for 30 minutes. And he goes and he plays the pinball machine. Well, one way or another, he ends up getting trapped inside of that video game. And that's all I'm going to talk about with the plot. It really does have this neat atmosphere that you really can't explain. It's almost like really being inside of a video game, because it doesn't really follow a pinball style thing, because it's really not a pinball game, but it's based on like the characters and having to get all these different items. And I think it's kind of funny that they have this jargon that really doesn't line up with video games, talking about having to get the tiara and having to get the this and that and the other thing, and none of that would be in a pinball game. Maybe it would be in like an RPG or something. But the thing I love about this is it just has this very weird, dreamy, surreal sort of atmosphere to it, where it really sort of drags you into like this being sucked into a video game sort of thing in like the early 90s. And it has this really unique charm to it that reminds me of a lot of what I would think virtual reality would be like back in the day. So it really did grab my focus, and I love this episode. The funny thing is, I believe that this episode had some similarities or even things that were copied later in the series when we get to the episode of the Bookish Babysitter, I think is what it was called, with that Melinda or whatever her name was. She was this really hot blonde babysitter. I don't know what she looks like now, but she had this really weird, like, really greasy gel hairdo that was just so 90s, where instead of having like spikes, you know, going up in the air, it's like going down your forehead spikes. I think I might have did that when I was younger. When I was like in the 90s, I guess. But so the Pinball Wizard really is one of those episodes you need to experience. It is an island unto itself, kind of, because there really is no other episode that I can remember that really had this type of idea, except for maybe one that I don't know when we're going to get to it, which was called The Tale of the Renegade Virus, which I will be trying to explain, because that episode is completely insane plot-wise, and it's pretty hard to describe. I mean, I like the really trippy Are You Afraid of the Dark stuff, you know, like that one, or The Tale of the Hatching is another one that I love, or The Pinball Wizard, obviously, The Super Specs. Anything that has a sort of trippy, surreal atmosphere, I really do like. This is the end of Are You Afraid of the Dark Season 1, though. So I want to do sort of like a recap, at least from memory, of what I thought about Season 1, since I don't really want to spoil anything when it comes to the Pinball Wizard, besides the fact he gets stuck in a game. I think Season 1 was extremely depressing. It just had so many rather forgettable or bad episodes. I really think that the show will redeem itself in future seasons, because it has to. There are so many great episodes that happen in later seasons that really make up for the mediocrity that is this season. It's just a bad season to begin with. I felt like it was scatterbrained. They couldn't figure out a theme. They couldn't figure out if they wanted to be scary or hokey or surreal or trippy or what they wanted to do. It was just very scatterbrained. But it did have some incredible episodes in it, like The Tale of the Captured Souls, which is one of my favorite episodes of all time of any TV show. The Super Specs ones, with its open racism, when you look at it, was still a great episode and a great concept of having two worlds trying to merge together. And that was just a neat concept that I really loved. I love this Pinball Wizard one. And you know what? I really did like the Sorcerer's Apprentice one that I thought I wasn't going to like. But it was scatterbrained too. The problem is, most of Season 1 is unwatchable for the most part. It really is. The Phantom Cab sucked. The Lonely Ghost was good but had a major issue that kind of ruined the episode. Zeebo sucked. You know, then you get into like, what was it? The Hungry Hounds and what's the other one? Where it really doesn't matter. You already know all of Season 1 because I reviewed all of it. There was so much stuff that you could just skip right past and not miss anything that it was just kind of saddening. And I'm surprised that the show was renewed after this. But I want to take a look at season two really quick and see if we're going to be doing great or if we're going to be doing terrible. Give me 1 second. Yeah, and we're going to open season two with Bobcat Goldthwait. Yeah, I remember that episode. That was actually, well, you'll hear what I think about it later. Season two has, well, that's actually great because episode two is good. So three is great. Episode four is one of the best of all time. So five actually influenced the Ghost Rider murders, which you've been listening to. Season two is absolutely going to be a masterpiece compared to season one. I actually know all of these, and so far there's only one that I would say is probably going to be mediocre, which might be the Magician's Assistant, because I just don't like magicians in this series. But yeah, season two is just a grand slam. Man, that's going to be a great series of episodes to watch, honestly. That's amazing. And then season three opens with one of the worst episodes ever. With season two, I think they really packed a huge wallop and really tried to do the best they ever could. So, season one overall, let's go through the list really quick and I'll give you my summary of each one. Not like the full summary because you'll have to listen to the episode for that, but I'll give you my ratings, or at least from memory what I remembered, you know, in the roughest sense. Tale of the Phantom Cab was garbage. Tale of Laughing in the Dark was garbage. The Lonely Ghost was good but had a problem with that one character that I hated, so that's above average. Twisted Claw was horrible. Hungry Hounds is probably the worst episode in the series. It was just so boring and pointless. Super Specs is one of the top 10. Capture Souls is probably number one. The Nightly Neighbors was just stupid. The Sorcerer's Apprentice was actually cool. The Jake and the Leprechaun made no sense. The Tale of Dark Music is one that I actually forgot to bring up, but I did review that one, and The Tale of Dark Music is up there in the top 10 as well. The Tale of the Prom Queen was just average, and The Tale of the Pinball Wizard I just told you, which my final rating for that one is honestly going to be probably a 9. It's not a perfect episode. It's not going to be up there with, like, The Tale of the Phone Police, which is going to be much later, or Station 109.1, which is probably in my top 5. It might actually knock off The Captured Souls. I'm sure that there are a few that could knock The Captured Souls off. Like, Station 109 would probably be one of them. The 13th Floor could as well, and Midnight Madness is probably the scariest episode, along with the Night... I think Night Shift. Do you want to go with the scariest episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark ever? It has to be The Tale of the Night Shift. That episode, and also The Tale of the Quicksilver, are two episodes that I absolutely avoid, because both of them are just way too scary for a kid's show. Midnight Madness, Night Shift, Quicksilver. Those are your three if you want to watch something really scary. By the way, I am actually not sure when this episode is going to come out, but I am actually planning on doing sort of like an audio let's play of the two Terror Tracks games that were basically released on CD. They were kind of like audiobooks that you could sort of choose your own path by switching to different tracks on the CD. So you start with, like, you know, song number one, I guess you would call it. Then it's like, if you want to do this, go to a track number 15 and stuff like that. We're going to be doing that for Halloween. So that's a couple months away from here, because I'm recording this all in August, but I'm not sure when you're going to hear this. Might be September. But either way, I want you to hear that right now, leading up that I will be doing a sort of special, like a two-parter, where we go through the actual Terror Tracks series. A big reason that this show changed its title from Terror Tracks to the Jack Pierce Project is because, number one, I don't want to get hit with copyright later down the road, and number two, a lot of people were saying that I should use my name because I'm a best-selling author, and, you know, they thought that that'd be a better idea commercially. So I don't know, the show might be renamed by them because I am very ADD and I like to change things a lot, but we'll see. Please follow me on Twitter at Jack Pierce Books. I will see you next week. Please have a wonderful weekend. I really hope you do. And I thank you for listening to me for so long and so far in this show. We have been having pretty steady growth, not massive numbers, but just knowing that anyone out there really enjoys this show is just wonderful to me. You can always reach out to me if you want to talk to me on Twitter through, as I said, Jack Pierce Books. Or if you're not a social media person, you can always email me, jack@terratracks.com. That site's going to just stay up, but I'm still not sure if I'm going to keep this brand name or not. It's just, I don't know. I'm indecisive on that. Anyway, I will see you next week. Take it easy, everyone.